noticed on a slide, Dr. Klein, that you said that you believe the water can be brought back to drinking water standards. Is that the S? And I just want to say that if it were cost effective to take ocean water or 2 times ocean water and desalinate it, that might be fine, but as I understand, this is not cost effective. So regardless of what else is in the water, that water is not coming back to us for use. It is being taken out of the cycle of life. The other thing is that I would like our audience to jump free of the vision that we're seeing now is Dr. Klein's slide where we show an increasing consumption of fossil fuels. Looking at just the need to provide for the fossil fuels is only half of the equation that we need to be deeply concerned about, because we are already seeing the effects of fossil fuel combustion in climate change. And the delayed reaction in climate change means that we are already in serious danger now. If we pursue any fossil fuel, never mind dirty, hard to extract, fossil fuel intensive in the extraction, and liberating even more CO2 into the atmosphere, this is going the wrong direction. www.transitionus.org and begin to learn how we collectively can begin turning ourselves away from dependence on fossil fuels entirely. Then we don't need to hydrofrack.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Our next speaker, your name and where you're from, please.
Donna Flahan. I'm a professor at the State University of New York at New Paltz, and for the last 6 years, I directed the Lower Manhattan Public Health Project to help the sick and dying heroes of 9/11 who are sick from toxic synergistic exposures. I used to work on Gulf War syndrome. I just want to say one thing as far as the public health perspective and toxic synergy. As we saw those toxins listed up there, the earliest toxic synergy, asbestos plus tobacco equals cancer much earlier. The toxic mix of 9/11, the toxic mix from the hydraulic fracturing, decrease the latency period, so you have accelerated cancers, and then the very scary discussion tonight about accelerated tumor growth. So we have before us a preventable, unlike 9/11, unlike Gulf War syndrome, with hydraulic fracturing, we have a preventable public health disaster. So support Assembly Bill 4220 for the outright ban on hydraulic fracturing in New York State. And then I wanted to, so 84220, and I wanted to touch on something else. I worked last January and February with I have no money, but a very rich developer from Brooklyn, Rafi Weiss. He was interested in purchasing the Neverly Grand Hotel here in Ulster County. He wanted to make the hotel a hotel. I was working with him. We had a vision. We were going to do geothermal, going for the zero carbon footprint as close as possible. That would have brought jobs, thousands and thousands of jobs to Ulster County, a Nashville North type hotel with music forums, a conference. I was the president of the New York State Communication Association, a place to pull conferences. And that's the future direction that we need to think about in New York and Ulster County, is how do we create jobs, develop green industries, and employ people. Well, I got a call from Rafi Weiss on my cell phone in early March of 2010, and he said, Donna, the deal's gonna fall through. And we'd already set up a lot. He said, I got a call from DEP, DEC, I don't know who it was, but they said it's gonna take about 3 years to get the septic license for a septic to be a septic system. He said, my investors will wait 10 months, my investors will wait a year, my investors won't wait 3 years. So the deal fell through. Later in March 2010, in the court records, you know who's named the buyer of the Neverly Grand Hotel? The Xinjiang Daming Mining Company out of China. And they're not in the hotel business, they're in the mining business. There's nothing natural about natural gas, and it won't create jobs in the US. And in fact, we won't own the gas, we'll just sit on top of it. And we'll have to buy it back from the multinational corporations or the Chinese vinyl hunter. So we need an outright ban in New York State. We all need to push for the ban, and then we need to be the beacon to the rest of the country and the rest of the world. We can join and ban hydraulic fracturing and save our future.
My name is David Gross. I'm the head of the Woodstock Environmental Commission. Our commission passed a resolution urging our town board to pass a resolution banning hydrofracking in Woodstock, and the town board did so.
Pass a law.
I'm sorry, what?
Pass a law, not just.
Yeah, okay, we're a commission. We don't do that. Thanks very much. It's a great idea. I'd like to point out to Dr. Klein that there is another way. Right out there is a big source of energy. It's called the sun. Unfortunately, Dick Cheney doesn't own it. He hasn't figured out a way to own the sun yet. So maybe that's part of the reason where we're looking at more fossil fuels instead of more renewable energy. Dick hasn't also figured out a way to own the wind. And maybe that's a reason we haven't figured out ways to use wind power. That's my first point. There's hydrocarbons are not the only way. Renewable energy is really what we need. It addresses the cost, it addresses global warming, it addresses pollution. It is the clean way to go. Doctor, I think you proposed, with all your presentation, I think you came up with what I call a geek solution, which is a really great, technologically sound solution that ignores human nature. This is like the $10,000 watch that a geek would come up with as the perfect solution to how to tell time. What you're overlooking is something I call human nature. Our race has, to my knowledge, produced structures that are about 7,000 years old, the pyramids. I think that's about as far back as we know a structure that humankind has produced to have lasted. You're talking about asking us to build containment facilities that will last for, I don't know how long they're gonna have to last for. We're also overlooking the fact that Dick Cheney is gonna own the well, but he's not gonna go down and pour the concrete into the casing. We have instance after instance of bridges falling down on throughways because the contractor saved a few thousand dollars by using substandard concrete. Why do you think, doctor, that a contractor is gonna follow the excellent DEC regulations, assuming they are excellent? Why do you think he's gonna do that instead of cheating and saving a couple of thousand or a couple of hundred thousand? We have instances of nuclear power plants where the operators of the plants were required to take x-rays of the welds in the steam in the high-pressure steam systems. And instead of taking the 1,000 or 10,000 or whatever number of x-rays that they would have been required to take to do the job right, they took one x-ray and they made 1,000 copies of that x-ray. So, doctor, I need you to address human nature in your geek solution.
Johannes Sayre from Old.
I see if the doctor could answer.
I need. Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to address. I'd like to address some of the other ones that came up before that too. But talking about the cementing, that's why we have regulations. We have regulations in New York that have made drilling safe. We've had very few accidents. The last 30 years that we've kept records, we have, DEC must do the inspections of all the cementing jobs. And you have to understand, when the well is depleted, that means it's depleted, it's incapable of flowing. So even if you did have a problem with the cement, which you're not going to, it's no longer active. It's a dead well. During the production phase, the production comes from the perforations and it goes up inside the casing, not around the cement. The cement is just to separate the groundwater sources from the producing zone. But after it has finished producing, it has no pressure. You need permeability and you need a pressure gradient to make fluids move.
Hi, Johannes Sayre, I live in Kingston. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak here.
Thank you.
I want to speak to the environmental concerns about hydrofracturing. There are many people here who can and have done that better than I can. From my perspective, it does seem like a train wreck so far, which could only happen because Dick Cheney got it exempted from regulation when he arranged for the energy industry to write the Bush administration. corporations, energy policy, and legislation. Instead, I want to talk about two episodes of binge drinking, which we're just now waking up from, and which I propose form the background to the situation. The first is the 30-year fraud we've all been told to believe that unregulated markets produce the best results for the public interest. They don't. They serve to move the proceeds of business to the wealthy. They create monopoly pricing and lack of consumer choice. I'm getting feedback. And permit speculative bubbles which destroy the industries on which the markets are based. The finance, airline, telecommunications, and energy industries are all painful examples of this in various ways. The free market philosophy of the last 30 years has been a fig leaf to justify the notion that everyone should be free to make money by any means necessary, regardless of the cost to others. The second is a longer binge. It's the 350-year history of the West overconsuming resources, its own and those misappropriated from others. And I note this meeting is taking place in the country which still constitutes only 5% of the world's population, but still consumes 25% of its resources, including energy. We inherited from the British the mantle of protector of hydrocarbon energy flows to the West's economy. They were messing around in the Mideast before we were, and when they lost their empire, we took over the job from them. And our doing the job has cost us trillions of dollars and thousands of lives in wars and immeasurable environmental destruction. Folks, the system does not work anymore. The members of the political class have stated in so many words, I've heard it several times, that they can't say that the American people will have to accept a more modest standard of living because they couldn't get reelected if they did. Well, I'll do it for them. The American people will have to accept a more modest standard of living. The American people will have to accept a more modest standard of living. We do not have a right to overconsume, to fill our homes with gadgets which consume electricity 24 hours a day, to be advertised to by electronic billboards, it's the new innovation in advertising, which use 100 kilowatts of power per billboard, 24 hours a day. The right of the individual to extravagant use of resources and to make money is subordinated to the people's right to a safe environment and to a sustainable future. Freedom doesn't mean doing what you want. It means having the ethics to make choices which serve yourself and your community rather than harming either. The energy industry has the resources in terms of capital and capability to lead the development of a sustainable energy economy, replacing the hydrocarbon-based one which has been failing for a long time now. They have a choice. They can do that and lead the way American business and industry used to and the ways they've always been capable of doing. One choice not available to them or to local landowners is to pollute our water supplies and cover our environment with delivery infrastructure to prop up and profit from an energy system that does not and will not work safely.
3 minutes, sir, I'm sorry.
Very good, thank you.
Thank you. Sir.
Hi, folks. First of all, I want to very much thank Brian Shapiro for organizing this on behalf of the Elsa County residents, the Elsa County Legislature. I think this is an extremely important event. And I would also like to thank the principal speakers, Dr. Bishop and Dr. Klein. Despite my misgivings about many of the points Dr. Klein made, I think they were both addressing in good faith what they saw as their considered views scientifically about natural gas drilling. That said, I want to follow through on something that Dr. Bishop referred to at the conclusion of his talk when he said he was going to be exploding some myths about natural gas. And I would like to talk about another sort of exploding dimension of natural gas, namely that it explodes. And it's not good for your health. I'd like to, with your indulgence, read a very brief excerpt from a local paper. This happens to be the Daily Freeman. It's not known as being a subversive or un-American paper. It's fairly centrist and even conservative in its views about free enterprise. And this is a story from March 6th of this year. And here it goes. It has to do with what happened in Lime Creek Valley in Wyoming. And this is Now, reading. In the shadow of Yellowstone National Park, there spewed a cloud of explosive activity. It forced evacuation for miles around and polluted the drinking water. And the people who live in Wyoming's Lime Creek Valley still wonder, 4 years later, if their lives will return to normal. Days after the August 11, 2006 blowout at the well, they remain with lingering uncertainty about a pollution balloon 225 feet underground. Okay. That's the first point I want to pull your attention to, folks. Even above and beyond all the other major hazards with the toxic mix used by the drilling industry, with the radiation that's already there underground and the other toxic materials that are already naturally occurring underground, we want to keep in mind that there's something very scary about natural gas, namely that it's methane, and methane will explode. Not good at all for your health.
Sir, you only have a couple more seconds.
Whoops. All right. I just want to let everybody know that in Texas, there were 100 blowouts, that means explosions, since 2006. In Louisiana, another state with notoriously lax environmental regulations, with even more understaffing and underfunding than we have in New York State, there were 96 blowouts, explosions, since 1987.
Sir, I apologize.
Okay, I'm sorry. But anyway, folks, natural gas is a very explosive issue and one that you want to keep out of New York State.
Yeah. I would ask speakers to please be concise. Thank you, because I do want an opportunity for the public, for everyone who wishes to speak, and we do have until 8:10 this evening.
I'm Dr. Andy Weiss-Bartzak. I'm an environmental toxicologist. So I'd like to give you a little from the toxicology side. But first, I want to remind everybody that natural gas is a fossil fuel, and the latest violent storms in the Midwest have killed another 13 people. And you have to wonder if these very violent storms, which have killed several hundred people, and maybe it's up to 500 by now, are maybe fueled by global warming, which is fueled by the burning of fossil fuels, one of which is natural gas. So we should not be celebrating getting more of a fossil fuel into our economy. One of the virtues of natural gas is touted how cheap it is. That's also touted for coal. It's cheap for the producers. It's not cheap for the people who live around where it's extracted. And it's not cheap for the people who breathe in the air when they burn it. All three fossil fuels produce pollutants which are bad for our health. From the unborn, through the children, through adults, to older people who have other problems besides that. So these wells go up to, these horizontal wells go up to 2 miles away, which means the landowner gets the money and the other people around there don't get the money, they don't get any of the benefits, they'll get the risks. Of course, so do the landowners get the risks. Now, I want to point out that because of the lobbyists for the natural gas industry, we cannot ask for a list of all the chemicals that goes into these wells. And therefore, we cannot know all the hazards of that material that comes out again and is trucked around, taken to wastewater treatment plants, spilled along the road, escapes into the air here and there. We all know how careless people can get when they're tired, when they've done it for a long time, when they're not paid. So, even our county legislators could not find out what chemicals are being used in these wells. And I say for that reason alone, since we cannot know, we cannot determine the hazards of this technology, the chemical hazards, we should say no to it in New York State. Thank you.
Thank you. I would ask all the speakers again to please be concise and under 3 minutes, please. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Paul Medici. I live nearby. I've been in the Gulf of Mexico during the 1980s in the oil patch, doing some work there, and I've seen the oil slicks and the garbage floating around. So oil exploration and gas drilling is not clean. I've seen that firsthand. I'd like to ask the doctor some questions. He mentioned that the wastewater, the hundreds of thousands of gallons, I believe it will be, if not millions of gallons, will be treated back to drinking water standards. How exactly do you do that? What do you do with the wastes that are produced by that treatment? I assume that this water will be trucked to and from. Trucking plain water to the sites does not present a noticeable hazard to the firemen and others that would have to respond to an accident. But what about the wastewater being trucked from the site? What sort of hazards does this present to firemen, police, EMS personnel that would have to respond to an accident? Not only an accident for the transportation, but an accident on the site itself. What hazards would they be facing as well? And many of the upstate fire departments are stretched very thin with limited resources. We barely have the equipment to handle structure fires. The added problems of unknown chemicals would most likely be overwhelming for very many departments.
Dr. Glenn and Dr. Bishop, to please have a concise answer.
Thank you for the opportunity to answer some of these. Currently, the larger operators are actually recycling and reusing most of the water. As an industry average, it's about 70% in Pennsylvania, where they're actually, because, as I mentioned, only about 10 to 20% of the water comes back to the surface that has to be treated. It's treated on-site typically with minimal filtering and then just mixed with additional fresh water and used on the next well. So that there's only 30% of that relatively small amount of water that's coming back that has to be treated. We don't know what the requirements are going to be in New York and the final regulations yet. Pennsylvania keeps changing how they're doing it, but right now they have stopped taking them at the publicly owned treatment works, and so any water that is not recycled and reused has to be taken to either injection facilities principally in Ohio, or there are several plants that have been built to actually do distillation, where they distill the water, precipitate out the salts, and the salts are disposed of in landfill or in cheap injection wells. And the water that is that's been purified is used again in fracture stimulations.
I don't need to add very much to what Scott just said about, you know, the process for treating these wastes. Typically, everybody who takes on any sort of waste in order to treat it has to be given a manifest of what's in there. So even if they won't tell you, they have to tell people who are accepting wastes for various kinds of treatment. As much as possible, the wealthy operators will definitely recycle and try to reuse. And not just the water, they will actually try to reuse barium sulfate. They can make cakes of that, you know, and reuse that for drilling muds and some of the other components. But at the end of the day, the toxics don't go away. They just get concentrated, and those have to be typically landfilled. And if they're not solid enough at the end of the recovery process for direct burial in a solid waste facility, they're mixed with sawdust or something else to solidify them so that they can be, you know, buried in a solid waste facility. So that's pretty much the end game for the salts and the other components of flowback that don't make the cut for being able to be reused. Ohio is changing some of their standards and regulations as well. A number of Ohio underground injection wells were closed last month. And it's upping the ante for people trying to find a way to use underground injection as a means of disposing of, you know, regular, you know, not concentrated liquid wastes, because they now have to truck them further off. But that's pretty new. I'm sure Scott was talking about that. It's one of the more difficult challenges for operators anywhere in the Northeast as to what to do with the waste flows.
We only have about another 12 minutes left. We're going to go a little bit more, but I do want to have, we have a number of individuals. Please, if you have a statement, keep it extremely concise, and I thank you for your patience and cooperation.
We'll definitely keep this under 3 minutes. My name is Stefan Chirac, and I'm a
small landowner, and I want to touch on this compulsory integration business, where I'm surrounded by fairly large landowners, and I value my property. I'm an American, property rights and all that, but unfortunately, if somebody decides to lease their area, they can drill these 1,000-foot, 2,000, 9,000-foot horizontal well drilling under my property. They can force me to do it if they own 60% of the surrounding area. And nobody's touched on that, and I find that a little disturbing. And I'm going to cut my comment short.
I can address that.
Thank you, sir.
Yes. Compulsory integration is common in states. Not every state has it, but there are advantages to compulsory integration. And it really is, to a large degree, for your protection, because if you didn't have compulsory integration, wells could be drilled around you on people that had leased their property and could drain your mineral rights without compensation. Compulsory integration allows you to be in the unit so that you are compensated for the extraction of the minerals. And on top of that, they cannot trespass on your surface. They are only trespassing onto your subsurface. But if you didn't have compulsory integration, they could drill the well right next to your property and you would not be compensated whatsoever. So I think compulsory integration is good. In some states, you can do compulsory integration by just owning 1 acre in the unit. In New York, it's 60-some percent.
Can I just follow up on that?
And then we do have to move on. I apologize.
There's a flip side to looking at compulsory integration. It is indeed common, and the idea of compulsory integration was first put in place to protect the correlative rights of people who are situated over pooled resources, so that somebody couldn't put a well bore down into that pooled resource and drain out the oil or gas from under your property. This has nothing to do with shale, which must be fractured to give up the gas. Your gas is not really readily going to flow over to the neighbor's property unless and until they put a well bore through there and fracture it. So the time for compulsory integration, the technological requirement for compulsory integration to protect people's correlative rights has come to an end with shale gas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our next member of the public, please.
Yes, hi, my name is Jill Obrig. I'm an art teacher in the Rhonda Valley School District. And I was very interested, in your screen there showing how we get extra tax money from the gas companies and such, and how we would economically do very well. Well, I want to ask you, sir, school children, if they're near a well where we have the gas flowing out of the condensation tanks, and they get extra asthma, or they get headaches and stuff, all that money that we've made is going to have to go to all our health expenses. So what good is the money that we're going to be getting? One other point, why aren't we working on geothermal heating? Why isn't that compulsory with every new house that's being built? That does not, we drill down, but we're getting just the air that's in there. What's going to happen if we do start to go into geothermal? And then we have this kind of gas drilling going on around them. So we have another way to heat our homes other than the natural gas. We go to geothermal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doctor.
One of the benefits of horizontal drilling is the ability to locate it far from structures, from wells, because we can drill horizontally such a great distance. We can have setbacks that will be sufficient for the things that you describe. In addition, in New York, produced fluids have to be flowed back to closed tanks. Unlike in Pennsylvania, they do allow pits in Pennsylvania, but we have to flow back to tanks and then remove them from the location to be processed. As far as geothermal, this is all part of the energy mix. This is a political situation, and I, you know, if you want to mandate renewables, that is a choice. I'm just putting that out as what our possibilities are. That's not really what I'm here to tell you.
Yes, and then Dr. Bishop would like to respond, and then I'm going to do my best to get to as many speakers as possible. We are on a very tight schedule.
This won't take long, sorry. There is a flip side to this looking for alternatives to energy use, and that is that I don't see a lot of people looking at the very long term. At the moment, we are not stressed for a lack of oil or gas, or coal for that matter. I mean, we're fighting to find ways to get people to slow down the extreme capital investments in fossil fuel extraction and divert those kinds of investments into more alternative and more renewable energy sources. And what could we use for a rationale? Well, how about the third or fourth generation out? Our children, grandchildren and great-grandchildren who are much more likely to be in an energy crunch than we are, will they thank us for selling the gas out from under our feet in our generation, or shouldn't we leave it for a strategic energy reserve?
Sir.
My name is David Waldo. I live in Olive Bridge. I'll make the following comparison. The Catskill watershed is like the Gulf of Mexico. Fracking is like deep water drilling. They are both newly developed techniques for getting oil and gas out of places that were formerly out of reach. They are risky to the environment in the best of circumstances. Cost cutting and haste to make up time led to the Deepwater Horizon disaster. Was the bottom line in haste involved in the Bradford, PA hydrofracking well blowout on April 20th when millions of gallons of water and toxic chemicals polluted a stream running into the Susquehanna River? There is no reason to trust the energy company's assurances that all is safe. Of course, they'll say that. If it is so safe, why was hydrofracking granted an unprecedented waiver from EPA regulation under the Safe Drinking Water Act of 1974? The 2005 Energy Policy Act granted this waiver, also known as the Halliburton loophole. If you do an end run around laws to protect the environment, don't ask me to then trust you. Whereas, people against fracking don't have a profit motive. They have nothing to gain except clean air and water. I recently saw a TV ad with the CEO of ExxonMobil saying, these shale gas supplies can take care of our needs for 100 years. Well, our aquifers have been taking care of needs for hundreds of thousands of years. If they are ruined through, oops, I did another blowout again, hydrofraccidents, they are ruined for good. And this gas doesn't even go to us necessarily, it goes to the world market. Chevron just bought mineral rights to 228,000 acres of land in southwest Pennsylvania. Are we to become a third world country whose land, water, and air is carved up and polluted by multinational corporations that don't care at all about the damage they do? I hope not. Thank you.
Thank you. We only have a couple of minutes left. I do want to get to as many speakers as possible. I interpret that gentleman's statement as being a general statement. Ma'am.
Hi, my name is Susan Holland. I live in Ulster Park in the town of Esopus. I would like to direct your attention to a handout I brought. I made 100 copies. I put them on the table over here. I called it a frack flash card. If you're like me and want a ban on fracking in the state and on the entire planet, please pick one of these up. I've tried to condense everything I know in terms of what we need to do today to get fracking banned onto this sheet, including all of the bill numbers in the Assembly and Senate and everything. So please pick one up. I also put a calendar on the back of other frack-related events. Please take one. If we run out, come see me. I'll send it to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Because we are so tight with time, unfortunately, if you have a statement, please make it as a very quick statement.
My name is Richard Grossman. I'm a legal historian. I live in West Hurley, New York. Two quick points. One, we've heard a lot about private property tonight. It's an axiom of Anglo-American law going back to the beginning of time that no private property right is absolute, and that people, a person does not have the so-called right to use his or her property in ways that harm other people's property. Secondly, we've heard a lot of data and technological information here. We haven't seen anything about sort of the governance issues here. And one thing I'd like to point out is New York State is not neutral. New York State is not a neutral playing ground for us to be, we, the sovereign people, allegedly making the decisions, you know, having realizing what we call consent of the governed. The state of New York, the legislature, has given corporations, whether it's the drilling corporations or the lawyer corporations or their advertising corporations or the water corporations, given them the rights of persons, given them enormous privilege. This legislature of the state of New York has declared that it is the policy of New York State to mine the energy sources that are below.
10 seconds, sir.
If you read the environmental policy law, the DEC law, you'll see that it's an afterthought. It's about mitigating whatever problems come up. It's not about saying we can do this without any problem, and the DEC is not about the authority to say no. So if we want to say no, we have to go to the legislature, which the two houses, both of them, are tyrannies, right? They're run
by people. Sir, there's other people on this.
So where do we go if we want to ban this? How do we do it? We need to have some very different discussions from what we've been having here tonight.
Thank you. Sir, very precise.
Yes, Bruce Simmons, ACORD. One quick question for either of the presenters. How do you propose to monitor the regulatory aspects of this practice with 16 inspectors in the state? Please answer the question.
DEC has the power to issue the permits, the number of permits that it thinks it can handle. It doesn't have to issue every permit that it's applied for. And
please, no interruptions.
And yes, I agree that DEC staffing has to be increased, and that increase should be paid for through the permitting process. Operators that are drilling the wells should fund the additional staff.
Isn't that a conflict of interest?
Please,
this is not fair
because
there's
other people.
It's ridiculous. It's a conflict of interest. It's called corruption. Thank you.
Regulators should be. We need more regulators. The DEC is a fine organization that has done a great job, has a great track record in the state of regulating oil and gas industry. We will need more regulators. No question about it.
Okay. Dr. Bishop, and then sadly, we only have time for one more question. We need to wrap this up at 8:10. I apologize.
As the DEC is composed now, we can't do it, and I don't think anyone argues with that. Their record in the state is not as good as they make it out to be. I've been in contact with a large number of public health officials across the state because I couldn't get what I considered really verifiable information from the DEC. And what I found is that, I know, with the boots on the ground, the people who were dealing with the public health issues related to natural gas in the various counties where it's been done intensively, there's a lot more trouble than most people have heard of. All I can say is, you know, as it's composed now, and with not just the regulatory, but the legislative underpinning, because I've done an analysis of the regulations, both as they are and as they are proposed, and the laws that underlie those, they're not in a position to guarantee very much.
Hi, my name is Jessica Anna. I'm from Bearsville. And I just want to say, I have to do this very quickly, but I'm not okay with gas companies taking mine or anybody else's clean, fresh water and putting tens of thousands of gallons of chemicals into it and using it for this purpose and then polluting our aquifers and our wells. And just to say about the three generations ahead, I wanted to talk about the seven generations of sustainability. that it's an ecological concept that urges the current generation of humans to live sustainably and work for the benefit of the seventh generation into the future. It originated with the Iroquois, the great law of the Iroquois, which holds appropriate to the think that seven generations ahead, a couple hundred years into the future, and decide whether the decisions they make today would benefit the children, their seven generations into the future. And there has not been a cumulative impact study, you know, 10 years into the future of what this is going to do. And it's just insane. It should be banned.
Can I just say thank you, and I apologize to the remaining speakers. We do not have any more time. I apologize. What I would ask is for those who wish to ask questions, we do have our speakers here to talk to you afterwards. I want to thank Ulster County Community College for affording us this opportunity to have this forum. What I would ask, because this is obviously not the type of event where we can have completion from 6 to 8 p.m., please stay connected, communicate with each other, stay involved in your local communities, talk to your local representatives, talk to your state representatives. This is an important issue that will affect us all. I thank all of you for joining us this evening.
All life needs water. No life requires natural gas.